Well, I'm not sure you should assume I'm not corrupt. If, in fact, you know that the only way you can raise any money to run for public office is to go to vested interest groups, then, in fact, you're put in the position that you have to begin to wonder whether or not you prostitute the ideas that you have about government in order to get the money to begin to run. See, I went to the big guys for the money. I was ready to prostitute myself.
Joe Biden's brother Frank is complicit in the killing of a man. Frank was actually ordered by a judge to pay $500,000 to the daughters of the man that was killed. But Frank is hiding out. And worse yet, he's been using the Biden name, and it looks to me like he's been coordinating with Joe to get lucrative business deals. And yet, Joe Biden has assisted his brother in hiding from authorities to avoid paying this $500,000 to the girls of the man that he killed. This is Joe Biden, folks. Joe Biden should be scared of this video.
Mr. Reagan.
Yesterday, Trump was acquitted. Impeachment is over. It was also revealed that Joe Biden is losing in the primaries. So does Joe Biden's corruption even matter anymore? It absolutely matters. The fact that many Americans, even Mitt Romney, think that Joe Biden is innocent, this illustrates the power of the mainstream media to blind voters to the corruption of Democrat politicians. A recent poll revealed that Democrat voters trust Joe Biden the most out of any of the candidates to handle foreign policy. That is extremely concerning. Joe Biden's family is referred to by the more tinfoil hat types in the dark corners of the internet as the Biden Mafia. Now, I don't ordinarily adopt such dramatic language in my videos, and I won't here, but honestly, that's a pretty accurate label. In this video, I plan to expose that the Ukraine deal with Hunter was not the first time Joe Biden got his son a job by exploiting his political position at the expense of the American people. This is a pattern, ladies and gentlemen. This is what Joe Biden does. I will expose the sheer criminality of Hunter Biden and his associates, and I will present a few other shady practices of Joe Biden, exposing his true character. Peter Schweizer just came out with a book. It's called Profiles in Corruption, right here. If you do not have this book, get it. It is amazing. It doesn't just cover Biden. It also covers Bernie and Klobuchar and Pocahontas and many, many more. It's truly a masterpiece of investigative journalism. Now, I have done a lot of my own research on Biden, and I work with a guy who is an amazing investigator. He goes by the name Dick Jackman on Twitter. Follow him if you want all the dirty secrets about Biden and AOC and all kinds of other corrupt Democrats. This guy is a legend. But after putting together our research, I read Peter Schweizer's chapter on Biden, and like 90% of our stuff was right in there, plus a few more nuggets that we didn't have. So this book is an absolute essential, as well as Schweizer's previous work, Secret Empires, which I feature in my previous video on Biden. But we've got a couple of nuggets that you won't find in the Schweizer books, so stay tuned. Now, Hunter Biden graduated from Yale with a law degree in 1996. That same year, Hunter was hired on at MBNA America. MBNA America was a major bank and a major credit card company. And all these MBNA guys, they were all buddies with Joe Biden. He even sold one of his homes, a mansion really, to the chief operating officer over there at MBNA America. But that doesn't actually sound all that bad, right? Hunter went to Yale, he got a law degree, and then he got a great job with a big company where his dad knows some people. A little nepotism, but not that bad. Except MBNA was the largest independent issuer of credit cards in the world. And it just so happens that MBNA from 2001 to 2005 was petitioning Congress to create legislation that would make it more difficult for people with credit card debt to declare bankruptcy. And which Democrat senator in the U.S. Congress do you think was fighting for them? I'll give you one guess. That's right, Senator Joe Biden.
If they cannot pay those bills because of an extended tour, which many are going through, and they have to declare bankruptcy, should the creditors who have lent money to them based upon their initial income, should they be the ones that are pay the cost, in effect, of their inability to pay? Or is that a larger responsibility of the public at large?
And wow, at the same time that Joe Biden is fighting for this new legislation that is unbelievably beneficial to MBNA, his son Hunter gets a retainer agreement with them for $100,000 a year? Amazing. Such a coincidence. Couldn't be a bribe. No, Joe wouldn't allow that. He's clean. He's perfect. He's working class Joe. But he's not clean and he's not perfect. Joe Biden is a deeply corrupt politician. In 2001, Hunter co-founded a lobbying firm called Oldacre, Biden, and Belair. I know many of you know what lobbyists are, but for those who don't, lobbyists basically get paid absurd amounts of money in order to influence politicians. Basically, if you want a senator to pass legislation or block legislation or grant a particular government contract or whatever, you hire a lobbyist with access to these politicians. And these lobbyists go in and make your case for you. Most people hate lobbyists and they think this is super shady business because why should only rich people and rich corporations and well-funded NGOs, why should these be the only people to get this deep influence with politicians? But that's how our system works currently, and though it may be repellent, it is legal. But when the lobbyist is the son of the politician he's influencing, this pay a lobbyist to influence a politician thing starts looking a lot more like bribing the politician's son rather than merely paying for access. Lobbying is legal. Bribery is not. And it's here that Hunter really starts getting his hands dirty. But before we get into that, I have to sell you something. Have you been watching Gold recently and wondering how you could get in on the action? This may come as a surprise, but you can without even buying gold. Sure, gold has skyrocketed recently, but hanging on to its coattails and catching up fast is silver. Yes, silver through noble gold. Like that dog who follows its master, silver follows gold. In fact, sometimes it even overtakes it. And it's cheaper to buy, too. Gold is around 80 times the price of silver right now. That's quite a discount on the dollar. But you stand to make the same kind of profit. Between December and January, silver made over 14%. Now imagine the tax relief on top of it if you bought silver for your IRA or 401k. Wondering who can help with this? Noble Gold can. The name has gold in it, but they also offer silver, platinum, and skyrocketing palladium too. Tempted? Find out more. Call Noble Gold now and discover how you can retire safely with silver. 877-646-5347 or go to noblegoldinvestments.com. So, as I said, in 2001, Hunter realized that this lobbying business would be a lot more lucrative if he's doing it for lots more companies and not just MBNA. So, naturally, Hunter started a lobbying firm. Now, I should mention that a politician can be lobbied by a relative. It's perfectly legal. However, it's one of the shadiest, most unethical political practices in Washington, D.C., and it's terrible optics. It's so obviously corrupt that few politicians engage in this sort of thing. It's too obvious what they're doing. But because most people really didn't pay that much attention to Joe Biden in 2001, nobody really noticed that Hunter had started this lobbying firm. And if anybody did notice, they didn't really care. So anyway, Hunter's got this firm. So then what happened? Well, suddenly Joe's Senate action seemed to realign perfectly with the desires of Hunter's lobbying clients. What a coincidence. Two specific incidents were brilliantly researched by Alana Goodman, and you can read about those in her article in the Washington Examiner. In 2008, as Joe Biden was running for president against Barack Obama and the other candidates in the Democrat Party, Hunter supposedly left the lobbying business and quit Oldacre, Biden, and Belair. He did this, he said, because the appearance of such a conflict of interest could have been damaging to his father's presidential campaign. Except he then starts another firm called Seneca Global Advisors, which is, I mean, it's really not clear what they purported to do, but what is clear is that this new firm magically acquired several of the clients of Oldacre, Biden, and Belair. What it looks like to me is that Biden didn't really want to leave lobbying. He just didn't think that he should continue lobbying officially out in the open for everybody to see. He probably thought that he shouldn't be lobbying through a firm with his name in the title. And so he continued lobbying, just, you know, now it was under the radar, under a different name, Seneca Global Advisors. This seems to me like a typical shady Biden family tactic. They have no problem with the scam, they just don't want anyone to see it. Now, back in 2006, Hunter decided to venture out away from his dad a little bit, and he and his uncle James Biden both suddenly decided to go into the hedge fund business. The business that they acquired, perhaps nefariously, is called the Paradigm Capital Management Core Alternative Fund. Attractive name. And they team up with this guy, Robert Allen Stanford. Now, Robert Allen Stanford was convicted a few years later of conducting the second largest Ponzi scheme in U.S. history, second only to Bernie Madoff's venture. Robert Allen Stanford stole $7 billion from investors. $7 billion. He's currently serving a 110-year prison term. And this is the guy that Hunter Biden and his Uncle James decided they wanted to do business with. And here's the craziest thing. You've probably never heard of this. Could you imagine if, say, Eric Trump had partnered up with Bernie Madoff in a hedge fund deal years ago? We'd all know about it. CNN would have made a documentary about it. The criminal history of the Trump dynasty or something like that. And they'd remind us about this at least 17 times a day. But somehow, we've never heard about this Biden stuff. And of course, Hunter and James Biden were never investigated for anything because, as we all know, the Bidens are perfect angels. The fact that the man they were doing business with was one of the biggest white-collar criminals in the history of the United States, well, that was just a coincidence. Okay, now we fast forward to 2011, and here is where the real corruption begins. Sure, the Bidens were involved in shady deals throughout Joe's time in the Senate, but now that he was vice president, they could make real money, and they found that China would be their golden goose. Here's the basic setup. Hunter, his buddies Devin Archer, Eric Schwerin, and Chris Hines, the stepson of Biden's buddy John Kerry, these four guys, Hunter, Devin, Eric, and Chris Hines, they set up a company called Rosemont Capital. This company had three investment branches, Rosemont Seneca Partners, Rosemont Seneca Technology Partners, and a real estate investment branch called Rosemont Realty Group. And these, of course, are just the most visible business entities. There were LLCs and funds sprinkled all over the place. Remember, the more complicated you make the money trail, the easier it is to hide your crimes. Through these companies, the boys would make tons of money from foreign governments. At the same time, Joe Biden and John Kerry would negotiate delicate international deals between the U.S. and those same governments. The most egregious case and the most profitable seemed to have been their dealings with China. As Joe Biden and John Kerry were negotiating with the Chinese government was investing in new business partnerships with Hunter Biden and Kerry's stepson, Chris Hines. This is not a joke. This really happened. The new business was called Bohai Harvest Rosemont Seneca Thornton. Thornton was the third party involved in the venture, headed by James Bulger, the nephew of mob boss Whitey Bulger, another interesting character to be connected to. But let me repeat this for clarity. As Biden and Kerry were negotiating with the Chinese government was investing in a new business partnership with Biden and Kerry's two sons, WTF.
Xi Juxi, 欢迎来到 Washington, D.C.
The Chinese also invested in Rosemont Seneca's real estate company through a Chinese investment firm called Gemini Investments. Gemini shoveled tens of millions of dollars to the boys over the years, committing a $3 billion investment with Rosemont Realty and buying out 75% of the company, which is now called Gemini Rosemont Realty LLC. And here's where the corruption seems to get compounded. Gemini Rosemont owns 135 commercial buildings in 22 states, and many of these buildings have offices rented out by government agencies. Government agencies rented out office space from Joe Biden's son and John Kerry's stepson. Again, just a coincidence, I'm sure. But what's really concerning is that these buildings are mostly owned by a Chinese business tied to the Chinese government. Now, the big question here is, did these deals modify Biden and Kerry's positions on China because the Chinese government was shoveling money into the bank accounts of their sons? Did these powerful American politicians negotiate a little softer? Did they perhaps look the other way when the Chinese government acted very much against U.S. interests? Well, that's impossible to prove.
Benjamin Franklin, one of the founders of the United States, and one of his inventions, the Franklin stove, was actually based on Chinese ideas. Intellectual property was a hot issue way back then.
More than 4 years ago, President Obama and President Hu decided that then Vice President Xi and I
should get to know one another. We had more hours of dinners alone than I think he ever anticipated.
China is going to eat our lunch? Come on, man. They're not bad folks, folks.
I'd like to make a toast. And to the hope and expectation that 50 years from now, our great-grandchildren will look back and say, what a beautiful history we wrote together. Mr. President.
I think it's safe to say that this did happen. China made the Biden and Kerry families very rich. At the same time, they were negotiating international agreements. But Democrats will tell you that no, there's no reason to ask foreign governments to look into Joe's corruption. He's clean. He's perfect. He's working class Joe. But no, this is about as corrupt as a politician can get. This is all covered in beautiful, elaborate detail in Peter Schweitzer's book, Secret Empires. If you haven't read it, I highly encourage you to get it. Now, here's a shady deal that you won't be able to read in Schweitzer's books. In 2013, Hunter invested in a social media venture called Kyova. The creator of Kyova originally developed it as a social media platform specifically for the healthcare industry, but the venture was a total failure. So in the wake of the failure, the site was rebranded for the general public. And who ended up buying into Kyova? Oh, that's right, Hunter Biden. The site had an unusual marketing strategy. They convinced Lady Gaga's DJ to release exclusive music on the platform, and Lady Gaga herself had an account. Soon, the platform was flooded with Lady Gaga fans, or as they call themselves, Little Monsters. This marketing arrangement was facilitated by who else but Joe Biden. Joe and Gaga also worked together promoting a nonprofit.
I'm here with not only a great friend, but a fierce advocate. Lady Gaga has been the voice for people who have been forgotten and people who have been abused.
But we're here to remind you that it's important to reach out to someone in your life that you can trust and to know that they will be there to help you. There will be someone to listen. Because you know what? It's on us.
A short while after the launch, Hunter's little social media investment, Kyova, suddenly just disappeared. There's no explanation for this. It just vanished. Now, no one really knows what happened to the social media venture, but it looks like it was bought up by Facebook in order to secure their monopoly on the social media landscape. And Dick Jackman's research suggests that this may have been the plan of Kyova all along. It looks like the company was never intended to be successful. They were created just so that Facebook would buy them out. The whole social media play was fake. It was just an attempt at getting bought out. And although I don't know if this was for sure what the investors were doing, and even if they were, there's nothing really illegal about this, it does seem like a bit of a scam. They're pretending to add value to the world to create something useful for consumers, but they're not. They're just trying to trick people into shoveling money into their bank accounts. Another shady deal by Hunter Biden. In 2014, and this is a pretty crazy one, Hunter's business partner, Devin Archer, then stole $60 million from the Oglala Sioux Indian tribe. The money was then shuffled around in Rosemont Seneca accounts. Did Hunter and Chris Hines know about it? One can only speculate. Not surprisingly, the federal government conveniently chose to ignore that potential path of investigation. But yeah, Devin Archer just straight up stole $60 million from an Indian tribe. Devin was arrested on May 11, 2016. In 2018, he was tried and convicted of this crime. However, the conviction was overturned a few months later by U.S. District Court Judge Ronnie Abrams. Allow me to read an article covering this decision. U.S. District Judge Ronnie Abrams in Manhattan ruled that the evidence at the trial earlier this year had not shown that the man, Devin Archer, knew that the bond issue was fraudulent or that he had received any personal benefit from it. Abrams said that she was, quote, left with unwavering concern that Archer is innocent of the crimes charged. I mean, it's laughable. These people are so corrupt, it's ridiculous. All right, let's have a look here. Now, in case you were wondering about this judge, Ronnie Abrams, she was appointed to her position by Barack Obama, and her husband, Greg Donald Andres, served as an assistant special counsel under Robert Mueller in the Russian interference investigation. Of course he did. Of course she was. These people are just corrupt. And let's be clear about Hunter and Devin and Chris Hines. Dick Jackman, the brilliant investigator who did most of the research for this video, he actually found a wealth of financial documents connected to these guys. And to top off all their shady deals, they expense pretty much everything in their lives to their businesses. What this means is that the money that they're collecting, they should be paying quite a lot of taxes on. But because everything that they buy for their personal enjoyment, they expense to their business, they pay less taxes on it. I'll give you a great example. Hunter bought a Porsche the very day he signed with Burisma. Everything they buy for their personal enjoyment, they write off as a business expense. He's basically pretending that the Porsche is the company car, or that the boat is the company boat, or that the Outback motorcycle lessons are company Outback motorcycle lessons. You know, typical business expenditures. So because all their money is tied up in company expenses, that money no longer counts as personal income. So these guys are scamming people all over the place. They are collecting bribes to facilitate the manipulation of American political policy by various companies and by foreign governments. And then on top of everything else, they're paying a fraction of what they should on the money that they're raking in. This is called tax fraud. And it's actually how they ended up getting Capone. It'd be a funny coincidence if these guys went down the same way. For instance, let's say that Rosemont bought a boat, and then Hunter later used that boat as collateral, claiming it as his own property. It would be interesting to see what the transfer value was from Rosemont to Hunter when he took ownership. But that's all accounting mumbo-jumbo, not that entertaining to a general audience, but perhaps interesting to non-corrupt federal investigators? I don't know. And now we come to the big one, Ukraine. Now, I've already discussed Ukraine in great detail in my previous video on Joe Biden. So if you want to listen to me break all that down, I encourage you to go to my channel's main page and then to look for that there. I'll also have it available at the end of this video if you want to wait until the end. But there is something that I got wrong in that video. Basically, Hunter got the job because Burisma was bribing Joe. You see, Joe Biden was negotiating a deal to send billions of dollars in IMF aid money to Ukraine. This money came from the US and from other sources, but it was all controlled by Joe Biden. And remember, Joe Biden pushed for this aid. This whole scheme was his idea from the start.
I remember going over convincing our team, or others, to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees.
So Joe Biden is in charge of all this aid money, billions of dollars. And so the Ukrainians, they had to make Joe happy. So what ended up happening? Somehow, Joe Biden's son Hunter got an unusually lucrative job at the Ukrainian national gas company, Burisma. And somehow, a lot of the aid money that Joe Biden was funneling into Ukraine was earmarked for energy security. What is energy security? Well, it turns out that is code for natural gas. And what's the biggest natural gas company in Ukraine? That's right, Burisma. And somehow, Hunter Biden gets a job at the company that Joe Biden is funneling U.S. tax dollars into. Such a strange coincidence. It's almost like this was planned out that way. And here's where I get things wrong in the last video. In the last video, I gave Joe the benefit of the doubt. I made the assumption that it was the Ukrainians who proposed the idea that Hunter take a payout for Biden's generous handling of the IMF money. I mean, the Ukrainians are all corrupt, right? They know how to do these schemes. I assumed that the mafia bosses of Ukraine would have dreamed up this plan and that simple working class Joe would have merely accepted the proposition. But what we find out when we look into Joe and Hunter's record is that this has been going on for many, many years. Joe has been accepting bribes through Hunter and other family members for years. This was not a proposition by the Ukrainians, clearly. This was a pattern. And this is merely the last deal in that pattern, at least the last one that we're aware of. This is not just simple Joe going along with it. This is Joe's plan, because this is what Joe does. And then when the Ukraine General Prosecutor Viktor Shokin starts poking around, Joe tells the Ukrainians, fire Shokin or the aid stops. And so, of course, they fire Shokin. Now, Joe insists that Shokin was fired because he was corrupt and that they replaced him with a prosecutor who he says was solid.
Look, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
But I've done some digging around on this, and I can say with total confidence that this is all malarkey. The prosecutor he had fired, Shokin, he was solid. And the guy that they replaced him with, Lushenko, he was totally corrupt. But I'm going to do an entire video on that, so I won't cover it here. So through all of these things, we see that Joe's clean, perfect, working-class Joe persona is totally fraudulent. It's an image that he uses to divert suspicion. And the mainstream media accepts this because they want to accept it. They don't want to look into Joe. They don't want to discover that he's corrupt. And so they just don't look. But if you're not convinced yet that Joe Biden is a totally corrupt politician, let's take a quick look into some of the stuff involving his other family members. Because it's not just Hunter who has benefited from this dynastic enterprise. Now look, Joe Biden is a family man, and this is a quality that we tend to perceive as virtuous. Allow me to read from his book. There's a saying in our family, if you have to ask, it's already too late. In our house, Val, Jimmy, Frankie, and I were expected to look out for one another. No one is closer, my mom used to tell us. You're blood. It was never, ever, under any circumstances, no matter what my brothers or sisters had done, appropriate to do anything other than to side with them. Going against them would have been like giving secrets to the Russians in the middle of the Cold War. It was traitorous. And that all sounds great, but it's only great if everybody in your family has integrity. If some people in your family are murderers or rapists, it means that you have to go around protecting murderers and rapists. And it seems that Joe Biden is so loyal to his shady family that he appears willing to engage in very serious criminal activity in order to benefit them. And he does this a lot. I think most people imagine Joe Biden as a folksy uncle with an eccentric habit of hair sniffing. But Joe Biden is far more sinister than that. Joe Biden's brother Frank is complicit in the killing of a man. Frank was actually ordered by a judge to pay $500,000 to the daughters of the man that was killed. But Frank is hiding out. And worse yet, he's been using the Biden name, and it looks to me like he's been coordinating with Joe to get lucrative business deals. And yet, Joe Biden has assisted his brother in hiding from authorities to avoid paying this $500,000 to the girls of the man that he killed. This is Joe Biden, folks. And you might think, well, maybe poor Frank really doesn't have the money. Oh, he has the money. In 2009, Joe Biden traveled to Costa Rica on official business. A few months later, Frank Biden had two multi-million dollar contracts with the Costa Rican government. The first was a country club development deal, and the second was for the development of a solar energy farm. Naturally, the funding for these Biden family projects came from U.S. aid to Costa Rica, and this aid was coincidentally negotiated by Joe Biden. Frank kept up the scam, moving his company Sun Fund America to the Caribbean, where he got yet another massive government contract paid for yet again from U.S. aid money facilitated by Joe Biden. Frank later set up a charter school scam in which he stole even more government taxpayer money. In 2010, Joe's other brother James was handed a lucrative executive position at a construction company called Hillstone. This was at the same time that they were bidding for massive government contracts. And wouldn't you know it, Hillstone secured those contracts and more. They procured dozens of lucrative government contracts throughout the United States and internationally. There are several other instances of this kind of thing, but honestly, this video is long enough. If you want to read about them, get the books by Peter Schweitzer. But just for one moment, just consider what would happen if any of the Trump children had ever engaged in any of the stuff I've mentioned here in this video. The media would never let us hear the end of it. Just think about how much criticism Trump gets without having committed any of these corrupt acts. And yet, Joe Biden, free pass. No investigations, no reporting, nothing. He rarely is even asked about any of this stuff. The media just sweeps it all under the rug and then attacks Trump some more. I asked Sebastian Gorka the other day why he thought everyone in the mainstream media is willing to participate in these kinds of manipulations of the public. His answer was that they're all true believers. They all genuinely believe in the left-wing policies of progressive social change. And they think that if there is some kind of corrupt politician enriching themselves at taxpayer expense, well, that's okay. At least they're helping us push the country in the right direction. And if the attacks on Trump are totally unfounded, well, that doesn't really matter. They'll still repeat the claims, knowing that they're lying, because they believe it'll help them get closer to their left-wing goals in the long run. They are a party of ideological madness. They are not a party of principles. Now, just one more thing. I believe that Joe Biden is also guilty of campaign finance violations. In 2005, Hunter and a bunch of Joe Biden's buddies set up a PAC called Unite Our States. These buddies include Larry Raske, Jeff Connaughton, and William Oldacre of Oldacre, Biden, and Bel Air fame. These guys are longtime friends of Joe Biden. These are not just concerned citizens. Unite Our States is now a super PAC that has been rebranded as Unite Our Country. Now, PACs, or political action committees, collect money for political candidates, and they organize marketing strategies for them and stuff like that. The tricky thing about PACs is that they're tightly regulated by the FEC, the Federal Election Commission. Basically, individual donations to PACs are extremely limited, so no one can donate, say, $1 million to Joe Biden's PAC. But a super PAC, that is a different story. A super PAC can take as much money as it wants. What's the difference? Well, a super PAC can't be in any way connected to the candidate it supports. Neither Joe Biden nor anyone in Joe Biden's campaign is permitted to coordinate marketing strategies with any super PAC. And that's all well and good. We love the freedom to express our ideas here in America. And if you want to express your ideas with millions of dollars in advertising, that's fine. And maybe there shouldn't be a limit on how much a person can donate to a campaign. And maybe campaigns should be able to coordinate with super PACs. But that's not currently the law. They can't do that. It's considered an egregious violation of campaign finance law. And every politician in DC knows this. And although I have no hard evidence, no smoking gun that clearly shows that Biden coordinates with his super PAC, he used over $16,000 of campaign money buying furniture and computers for this organization back in 2007. And the fact that the super PAC is run by some of his closest friends, family, and colleagues, that says a lot. Furthermore, Joe Biden just blatantly steals money from his campaign contributors. I'm just going to put these screenshots up, and if you're interested, feel free to look at them closely. Joe Biden just basically takes campaign contributions intended to help him win elections to work for his constituents, and he instead funnels this money into his and his family's coffers. This is a typical Democrat politician tactic. AOC does it, Bernie does it, and Biden does it. So let's once again ask the question, is Joe Biden corrupt? Well, let's recap. Joe has been getting Hunter lucrative jobs since 1996 for 20 years, until he left office in 2017. He's been exploiting the power's political position to do this at the expense of the American people. Hunter has been involved in a variety of criminal ventures, and he's worked with a variety of shady characters, many of whom are now in prison. He not only ripped off hard-working middle-class Americans, but also one of the poorest Indian tribes in the country. Also, Hunter and his friends appear to have an unlimited pile of get-out-of-jail-free cards. Hunter Biden, Chris Hines, Eric Schwerin, and Devin Archer took insane sums of investment money from the Chinese government at the same time Joe Biden and John Kerry were negotiating U.S.-China relations. Suddenly, Hunter gets another job because of his daddy, a board seat with Burisma, but this time the payoffs coincide with massive U.S. aid to Ukraine, facilitated by Joe Biden and funneled into the very company that Hunter happens to work for. Joe has helped his brother hide from the law for decades so he won't have to pay the children of a man he is complicit in killing. Joe Biden has awarded lucrative contracts to businesses who paid off his family members. And Joe's close personal friends, family, and associates run his super PAC, very likely violating campaign finance law. Good old working class Joe hasn't just committed a few boo-boos here and there. He hasn't just dipped his toes into the gray areas of political ethics now and then. Joe Biden has submerged himself in the deep end of political corruption. Joe Biden has knowingly, systematically abused his political power to enrich himself and his family. The man has adopted political corruption as a way of life. And so Trump was right to have asked the president of Ukraine, Vladimir Zelensky, to look into Joe Biden's corruption in Ukraine. And I hope that soon we will get a full investigation into all of Biden's corruption. Because there will always be corruption in every government, but in the United States of America, we cannot sit idly by and let it happen. We must obliterate it wherever we see it. We cannot find this kind of rot in the system and then just ignore it. Because others will see that we're ignoring it, and they will know that they can get away with it too. Joe Biden knew exactly what he was doing in Ukraine, and this is a a pattern, folks. This is not just a one-time deal. And every time we see corruption like this, no matter who it is, we must cut it out like a cancer, both for the immediate relief and as a warning for all of those who might try something similar. You will get cut out in just this same way. We cannot afford to tolerate corruption in the U.S. government. If you want to know all the dirty details about Biden and AOC and Bernie and everybody, I would urge you to subscribe to Dick Jackman on Twitter and to buy the books by Peter Schweitzer, Secret Empires, and the new book, Profiles in Corruption. Well, that's it for me. Don't forget to share this video. It's very important. Copy the link right now and share. I think everybody needs to see it. And remember, it's not that our liberal friends are ignorant. It's just that they know so much. That isn't so. Good night.
This is the issue of this election. Whether we believe in our capacity for self-government or whether we abandon the American Revolution and confess that a little intellectual elite in a far distant capital can plan our lives for us better than we can plan them ourselves.
Thank you so much. It is such an honor to be here. Talk about what I think is an enormous problem that is confronting every liberal democracy, which is the concentration of power in the hands of not only big tech, but monopolies across our political economies. So my name is Matt Stoller, and I just finished a book called Goliath on the history of monopoly power. And I am here to give you an overview of the American reformer perspective on big tech. So here's the problem in a nutshell. A few years ago, Mark Zuckerberg said the following, quote, "In a lot of ways, Facebook is more like a government than a traditional company. We have this large community of people, and more than other technology companies, we're really setting policies." Zuckerberg is trying to establish a global court for content moderation. He is now structuring explicitly the media environment with a quasi-cartel of publishers, and he is even trying to create his own currency. Such concentrations of power, private, unaccountable power, are simply not compatible with democracy. And I want to make one other quote, which came from a speaker earlier today, Yu Hong, who said about the Chinese big tech companies that the fundamental imperatives are the same for those companies as for Facebook, Google, Amazon. So what I'm here to deliver a fairly simple message, which is we do not have to pick, and I say we because I mean liberal democracies, we do not have to pick between Chinese autocracy and the autocracy of Mark Zuckerberg. That is a false choice. Yeah, you can clap. It's true. And let's be clear what these companies do, how they make money. They sell advertising. And if you do things to their business models to preserve democracy, what we will get is slightly less relevant advertising. That's the cost of saving democracy. Is that a trade-off that we want to make? Because it's a trade-off I think we should make. Yeah. All right. I didn't even say anything mean about Donald Trump. Okay, so how are Americans reacting to the debate over big tech, to this unaccountable accumulation of power? Well, it's pretty simple. We are changing our minds. 2/3 of Americans believe Facebook and Google should be subjected to an antitrust investigation. Last April, or April of 2018, Mark Zuckerberg testified before Congress. And the tech press widely mocked the politicians who were asking him questions. They don't know anything about technology. It's a joke. A couple of weeks ago, he testified again, and the tech press had a very different frame. They said that beyond the verbal thrashing, members of the Financial Services Committee have some genuinely relevant inquiries. Unlike Zuckerberg's first congressional appearance, especially in the House, a lot of his interlocutors seem to have done considerable homework, and they raise issues that credibly challenge some of Facebook's pronouncements about Libra. That comes from Wired magazine. Wired magazine is a sycophant to big tech, and they were criticizing Mark Zuckerberg's appearance before Congress complimenting American politicians in Congress. That's a really big deal. So what happened? And what are the different proposals for reform of big tech? Well, the short story is an ideological collapse of the prevailing neoliberal framework that has guided policy for 40 years. Now, a lot of people think American capitalism means inequality and this dynamism in the private sector, these monopolies. I don't really have time to go into it. That is a complete false myth. It was invented in the 1950s by a few American academics on the left. American capitalism from the 1790s until the 1970s tended to mean equality. And Americans used to contrast their system of capitalism and open markets with the inequality of European aristocracies and monarchies. But that changed in the 1970s. And since the 70s, policymakers have encouraged mergers, concentration, and corporatism. The number of public companies in America has dropped by half since the 1990s, and they did this under the guise that big business is good for consumers. And today, in both the US and in Europe, the goal of consumer welfare is what our competition policy aims to achieve. And after all, if you're thinking about consumer welfare in terms of the money you pay, Google and Facebook are free. So what's the problem? Google, Facebook, and Amazon are pace setters of a new monopoly-dominated economy that has emerged since the 1970s. And we tend to think of these companies as innovative, as tech companies who started in garages, but it's not really accurate. These are financial holding companies built through mergers and legal changes. So from 2004 to 2014, Google spent $23 billion or more buying 145 companies, including the advertising giant DoubleClick. Facebook has spent a similar amount buying 66 companies, including key acquisitions allowing it to attain dominance in mobile social networking. Not a single one of these mergers was blocked, despite anti-merger laws in both the US and in Europe. Allowing these mergers was policy. Similarly, the absence of public rules on structuring the use of data, such as the failure of Do Not Track — this is more about America than Europe, but it's pretty bad here too — it enabled a particular regulatory regime based on concentrating the flow of information, advertising, and data. So these financial holding companies are dominant. Google has 8 products with more than a billion users: search, browsers, maps, online video, mobile phone operating systems. Now, people like to talk about economies of scale, networks effects, and so on and so forth. There's nothing that you need, like, there's no scaling economies in terms of having search and YouTube. Those are just separate divisions, right? So a lot of this stuff is just myth that people tell because they're selling something. Now, basically what these companies do is they have control over the plumbing of the online advertising system, and they structure the rules of advertising. And they do so to encourage data leakage, invasive surveillance, and addiction. To protect privacy and to protect democracy demands addressing the problem at the source, which is the monopolistic models enabled by our current legal framework. Now, I could go into how these guys are killing the free press — they are — how they are addicting and spreading misinformation — they are — how it's coming now from China, TikTok, which now is controlled effectively by the CCP. But the crisis has been evident for years. What changed to prompt a political response? There were basically 3 events. First, there was the financial crisis. And all of a sudden, everyone realized banks and corporations are not neutral and scientific. They don't deliver consumer welfare. They are political institutions. Second, there was the election of Donald Trump. So for a time, big tech avoided the skepticism that most of us felt towards Wall Street. Obama administration officials thought that if you go to work for Wall Street, that's a little bit sleazy. But if you go to work for Facebook and Google, that's progressive. But when Donald Trump was elected, it turns out that these are just advertising companies. And the third is Cambridge Analytica, the scandal that showed that these corporations are political actors, first and foremost, no different than the banks that crashed the economy. So now the ideological crack-up is happening in the business community too. 50% of CEOs, Fortune 500 CEOs, believe that Facebook should be regulated. There's a bunch of billionaires who are calling for these companies to be broken up. So what does all this mean? Well, it's kind of hard to tell what the immediate policy impacts are. Donald Trump and his administration are, let's just say, not consistent in their policy goals. But Congress is more serious, and the change that's happening, I think, among the American people and all over the world is real. So Congress is investigating the tech platforms through the House Antitrust Subcommittee led by David Cicilline. He has joined the International Committee of Parliamentarians. Competitors are giving information to his committee. I think they're very serious. They're going to come out with a report next year. Every state has an attorney general, a law enforcer, and 50 of them are now investigating Google. And they have said, the lead, who's a conservative Texas Republican, said that breaking up Google is on the table. California passed a privacy law sort of modeled on the GDPR. Elizabeth Warren has suggested splitting up tech platforms, and all Democrats are now expressing skepticism towards big tech and talking about antitrust, and this is causing the federal enforcers to play catch-up. So what are the proposals on the table? Well, I'm going to give you three philosophies. The first is to continue the neoliberal underpinning of our culture and allow private governments in the form of Facebook, Google, TikTok, big tech. That's what Mark Zuckerberg wants. It's also what you see when civil rights group or conservative groups ask these guys to censor content in the way that they prefer. Much of the antitrust establishment here and in the U.S. is basically fine. They want a few tweaks, but they're basically fine with these guys being in control. They want privacy rules, but rules that don't really hinder Google and Facebook to structure the internet how they want. The second philosophy is the National Champion Framework. This framework is organized around the concept of regulated monopoly. So national security experts want to protect big tech because they perceive American corporations as essential to blocking Chinese competition. I go into that, but basically it's coming from a few national security people. Brad Smith of Microsoft is talking about how he's appointed a team of Microsoft diplomats who work with policymakers and industry partners around the world to advance trust and security on the internet. And he talks about how companies are now involved in a new generation of humanitarian and arms limitation issues. Private government, but nice. Okay, data regulation makes sense in this case, but this regulation must not hinder the ability of the fused corporate and governing state to wield power. There's a sort of deal here where mass commercial surveillance by large entities is useful for national security ends, but it must be kept within bounds. Now, this national champion idea is extremely dangerous because it is about concentrating power and putting it in the hands of the state. I hear a lot about European champions here. You should be very careful about whether you concentrate power and how you choose to concentrate power. Yeah. Now, the third philosophy is the tradition that I come from, which is regulated competition, or decentralizing political power by breaking up monopolies and regulating the business practices in the resulting markets. So Elizabeth Warren seeks to just break up big tech and then also use public utility rules to make sure that there are no conflicts of interest in the business model going forward. The intellectual forebearer of this model is Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis. Brandeis's view was that democracy and unregulated monopoly are simply incompatible. George Soros made this point at Davos a few years ago, saying that there could be a, quote, alliance between authoritarian states and these large data-rich IT monopolies that would bring together nascent systems of corporate surveillance with an already developed system of state-sponsored surveillance. This may well result in a web of totalitarian control, the likes of which not even Aldous Huxley or George Orwell could have imagined. Now, I'll just say a little bit about history here. It was in 1944, and this is just, we invented a fake history in the 1950s, 1950s, 60s, and 70s. We made this story that policymakers created this era of prosperity based on consumerism and growth. And that is not true. They based their policy on decentralizing commercial power and controlling big finance because they had gone through two world wars. That's what it was about. It was about preventing autocracy through our financial system and preventing world war. And we stopped doing that in the 1970s. And because of that, we are in a real crisis. And it's not just big tech that's the crisis, but they are the pace setters. But it's important to understand that the history that we know of how our democracies got to where they are is largely, not entirely, but largely about writing political economy out of the equation. But the real answer to addressing the power of Google and Facebook is simple. If something is too big, make it smaller. So Google's 8 products with more than a billion users. I don't know why they have to all be in the same corporation. Break apart Facebook. You can impose interoperability mandates. There's a lot of really good work here on data. I'm excited to learn more about that. Impose vertical restraints so that we can maintain the benefits of scale, but eliminate the inappropriate political power of Mark Zuckerberg and the rest of the big tech. In this schema, regulating the use of data is not about protecting privacy per se, though it can be that as well, but it's about preventing coercion and manipulation, price discrimination, theft. Fundamentally, the question that Zuckerberg or institutions like Google or TikTok present to liberal democracies is critical. Can we muster the will to govern ourselves? Or will we allow ourselves to be distracted or frightened into submission? Every generation gets its chance to answer these questions, but the questions always look different. In our case, those who seek to put us all into servitude, they look like Google, or maybe they look like European champions, or national champions, or American national champions, or Chinese national champions. But though their power can seem overwhelming, and though they can present a whole bunch of false choices to us, we have the honor of living in democracies, and we do not have to submit to them. Thank you.